Today's flag salute will be led by Representative Gilman. Speaker's privilege. I will lead today's flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The opening ceremony will be presented by Pastor Brent Deffenbecker, the co-lead pastor of New Hope Community Church in Happy Valley. He is the guest of Representative Kennemer.
Good morning. Let's pray. Thank you for today, God. It's a day that you've made, and we're glad to be here. We recognize everything that exists is because of you, and it comes from you, and it belongs to you. And we acknowledge your presence in this place and what is accomplished here today. Would it be honoring to you? You're aware of the challenges that are facing our world, our nation, and this great state that we live in. You're also aware of the personal challenges and concerns that many of us have, relationship, financial, and even some leadership challenges. So Lord, would you today, in your presence, would you allow us to have a divine perspective? Would you allow us to see what could be seen as delays and detours and sometimes disappointments to be divine moments where we can see your will being done here on earth, here in Salem, as it is in heaven. So Lord, today, because you choose to work through people to accomplish your purposes, we desire to collectively see your will. And so would you give us that New Testament perspective to fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what's unseen? Because at times what's seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And finally, God, I ask today that we would that you would guide our paths, you would direct our decisions, and Lord, that you would give us the humility to follow your lead, the integrity to do your will, and the courage to do what's right. Because you're sovereign and nothing surprises you, and because you're personal and you really do care, we commit this day, this time, this agenda, and every decision to you and for your glory. And I humbly ask this in the name of the one who changed my life, Jesus Christ. Amen and amen.
Courtesies. Representative Kennemer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish to ask that courtesies be extended to my special guest, Lead Pastor Ray Cotton and co-lead pastor Brent Deffenbacher, who delivered our invocation. They are pastors at New Hope Community Church. It is the community church very involved in the local community across the street from Town Center. Sherry and I consider it our home church. We invite you to join us. It would improve our attendance. Wonderful. Please welcome Pastor Cotton and Pastor Deffenbacher. Thank you.
Representative Maurer, for today's moment in history.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to have to defer for a few minutes. Will you return to me in a few minutes?
Of course, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Call.
Colleagues, most of you know the gentleman sitting next to me, Nate Reaver, my legislative aide, but you probably don't know his wife, Patty, and his boys, Linus and Lucas. I think it goes without saying that our staff make a lot of sacrifices for us to achieve the things that we seek to do in this house. Nate has made sacrifices, and that means that his family has made sacrifices, and for that I'm thankful to them, and I would hope that you would all extend your courtesies to them. Thank you.
Welcome. Further courtesies, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's my privilege today to introduce one of my legislative interns, Jonathan Heritage. Jonathan is a student at both Lane Community College and the University of Oregon, majoring in theater and political science, and hopes to continue on to law school. He is president of Lane Community College's Student Productions Association. He's been working with me since the second week of the session, and last session he had the pleasure of working for the representative from Tigard. He hopes one day to work as part of the legislative council team here at the Capitol or do the people's work in this chamber in some other way. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome, Jonathan. Further courtesies, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very excited today to have honorary pages. Sammy and Ashley, would you please stand? Thank you. Sammy Rue is from Staten Middle School. She's 14 in the eighth grade, and a lot of these kids in Staten are part of student council. She also loves volleyball, basketball, and softball, and if I take my heels off, I think she's taller than me. And she wants to be a physical therapist or a pediatrician. And Ashley Taylor, also in the eighth grade at Staten, vice president of the student body, volleyball, basketball, and track. And she wants to be a photographer or a therapist. And yes, we made a few therapist jokes a little bit ago. So thank you, ladies. I also have a fine young man from SIO, Austin Springer. Would you please stand? Austin is from Lacombe School. He's in the sixth grade. He's 11. He loves baseball, soccer, youth group, and he wants to be a state representative just like his mom. Please welcome them to the House.
Welcome, Pages. And Austin, thank you for loaning your mother to the people of Oregon. Further courtesies, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I'm hoping you will extend courtesies to my honorary page today. Devin, would you stand up for me, please? Thanks. Devin Donahue is an eighth grader at Sherwood Middle School. He enjoys playing guitar, soccer, church youth group, and sermons, creating computer video games, playing Xbox, and creating things out of duct tape. Who doesn't like that? Devin's career goals include being a computer programmer. Welcome, Devin. Thank you, colleagues.
Welcome, Devin. Further courtesies, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, we have a page here today from Medford, Oregon, Laura Hunter. Would you please stand up? Lauren is a sixth grader at Lone Pine Elementary School in Medford. She serves on the Student Senate, on Safety Patrol, and has been voted the best all-around student of the year at Lone Pine. Lauren is striving to be an Olympian, first followed closely with a career as an attorney. Welcome, Lauren.
And Pages, thank you for your service today. Further courtesies, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker and colleagues. I'd like to have you welcome an honorary page, James Bond. James, if you stand, no, he's not 007, he's close, though. James is from Clover Ridge Elementary. He's in grade 5. He enjoys soccer, social studies, writing, camping, learning to play the oboe, and I have special, that thing's almost as big as you are. But anyways, welcome him. Thank you.
Representative Maurer, are you ready with today's moment in history?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And obviously my wife is not here to hold my hand on these things. The first salmon cannery on the Columbia River was established in 1866, a small, isolated operation, and employed a handful of local men in the harvesting and canning of salmon. Robert Hume, one of the founders of the cannery, later wrote, "As we were located 3 miles from the nearest neighbors, it was months before we got sight of any womankind except my mother." By the end of the 19th century, however, women were a common sight at salmon canneries throughout the region. Women worked a variety of jobs at canneries, from filling and labeling cans to office work. As was common at the time, women were paid less than men. Women were paid around $1.50 per 10-hour day for unskilled cannery work, while men were paid $2.50 for the same work. Many cannery workers started working at a young age. Canneries were diverse workplaces. In the mid-1920s, the Elmore Cannery in Astoria employed an average of 18 white women, 7 Japanese women, and 3 Chinese women per month. Can fillers generally worked in groups of about a dozen, and the assignment of workers to tables in the plant was based primarily on ethnicity, with other considerations secondary. The actual harvest of a salmon was conducted almost exclusively by men, though there were some scattered references to women fishers. Although it was rare for women to work on fishing boats during this period, they contributed in other ways, such as mending nets or keeping the books. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you for that moment in history, Representative. Further courtesies, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Shocked me to see you there. I thought that the honorary pages had gone up there.
Yeah. Indeed, Representative, the inmates are running the asylum today.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I, with my colleagues, always enjoy the moment in history. I particularly enjoyed the canned moment in history that Representative, my friend, already read. But I, Mr. Speaker, have a little different moment in history that I'd like to share today. It's non-traditional. It goes against the grain, so to speak. Usually we're honoring these great pioneers that we see etched above us in these beautiful murals. But today I honor another pioneer of sorts that came lately to the state. Many pioneers, as you know, Mr. Speaker, come from the east and head west. This pioneer started in the far west and then headed east and did some things that most of us will never do. This pioneer went to some reputable schools of higher education, something I've never aspired to. This pioneer rose quickly and packed his carpet bag and headed to Portland. And now serves with distinction right here in this chamber. Later today, the representatives from Gresham and Lake Oswego have planned a very special commemoration of this pioneer's birthday. We'll all be at Chuck E. Cheese on Lancaster at 6 o'clock. But until then, Mr. Speaker, I know that my colleagues will join me in a rousing happy birthday to this very special Oregon pioneer, you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative.
Not done. And the one and the two, happy birthday.
Birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, Representative Barton.
Happy birthday to you.
Thank you, colleagues. I really appreciate everyone gathering together today to celebrate my birthday. This means a lot to me. I'd also like to appreciate the rousing voice of Representative Cole, whom I could hear clearly above the fray from back here. As you know, this is a very special birthday for me. I'm now old enough to drive, and I will be missing this afternoon's committees while I go and get my license. I've been studying a great deal for it. Thank you, Representative. Very much appreciated. Further courtesies, Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and happy birthday. I even brought some very good friends and leaders. If they'll please stand to help celebrate your birthday today. On behalf of Representative Huffman, Representative Stiegler, and Representative Gilman and myself, I'd like to welcome members of the Central Oregon Cities Organization, COCO. They're here today. They've met with the leadership, and they'll be here all day. Central Oregon Cities Organization includes all 9 cities in Deschutes, Crook, and Jefferson counties. Today we have mayors, councilors, city managers, and staff from Bend, Prineville, Maupin, Madras, Sisters, and Redmond. The Metolius and Culver are also members of COCO. COCO, working with members of this body, has been a leader in crafting a water conservation system that has tripled flows in the Middle Deschutes, expanded our state's airports, and supporting enterprise zones which create jobs. COCO has been a great ally of all of us in Central Oregon delegation. And also we have another, with everyone will sit down but Betty. Also we want to wish a happy birthday to Betty Borgen, the Redmond assistant to city manager. And please extend courtesies to my friends and the leaders from Central Oregon today in their capital. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Welcome to your house. Further courtesies, Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Representative.
Colleagues, I rise for this courtesy. It's often said in times of tragedy, it's difficult to distinguish the heroes from the angels. I rise to extend courtesy to the folks from New Hope. Those of us in the law enforcement, the public safety profession, military folks, know all too often that in times of tragedy, when we have those line of duty deaths, very few congregations are large enough to accommodate the needs. And New Hope opens their doors to all of our families, our entire community, regardless of your religious beliefs. And they do an exceptional job of taking that stress and burden off our families. And I just wanted to point that out publicly and say, once again, thank you very much to New Hope, and thanks for being here today. Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Representative, and thank you. Further courtesies, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I am pleased, my dear friends in this House, to introduce today elementary students from Cottrell in Boring, Oregon. Cottrell is one of 10 schools in the Oregon Trail School District, and they have been studying the Constitution this year, and they are in the fourth and fifth grade, and they have elected a president, they have representatives, they have passed laws, and they've appointed judges. And in preparation for this trip today, they also passed a law to put a school nurse in every Oregon school. So they have identified a problem, but they've also created a solution. And their solution is that it should be, they should be paid for with a penny tax on every candy bar. Well, please welcome the fourth and fifth graders from Cottrell.
Welcome to your house, and thank you for your work. Further courtesies, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Possibility of using a visual aid.
Representative Roblin requests unanimous consent to use a visual aid. Is there any objection? Hearing none, Representative.
Thank you. In commemoration of your birthday today, we did gather a few gifts. So I have a Winnie the Pooh and a microphone so you can practice, and a Yoda so you can get some wisdom. Thank you very much for the opportunity. We'll leave it on your desk out here.
Thank you, Representative. And in fact, feel free to bring it right on up. I'd like to, I can hardly wait. Colleagues, we are well on track for the longest courtesies of the session. Further courtesies, Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and happy birthday. Colleagues, I understand we have a group visiting us today from Willamina, the West Valley Christian. Are they still in the gallery? All right, great. A group of 20 visiting us today with their leader, Barbie Clark, and we welcome you to your house.
Welcome. Further courtesies, additional courtesies, Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues in the side aisle, we have Kelly Matting. Kelly is from Jackson County. She is in charge of the Jackson County Development Service Director. She supervises planning, building, and code enforcements for the county. She has been with the county for 5 years as an employee and has resided in Jackson County for 14 years. Please extend a warm welcome to Kelly.
Welcome to your house. Is there anyone we have missed today? Does anyone have further courtesies? Hearing none. Verification of quorum. The clerk will open the voting system to determine the presence of a quorum.
Just one.
Representative Buckley is present. Representative Maurer. Representative Maurer. I'm sure he'll return. A quorum is present. Messages from the governor. Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform the Senate has passed Senate Bills 85, 218, 242, 243, 280, 464, and 539. Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you that he has signed Senate Bill 5552, 581, and 14.
First reading, memorials and resolutions.
HCR 9, in memoriam, Dr. Robert Bacon, 1918 to 2009. HJM 19, urging Congress to reimburse Oregon taxpayers for costs of incarcerating illegal immigrants who have committed crimes in the state. HJR 39, proposing amendment to Oregon Constitution related to education funding. HJR 40, recognizing Dr. Jane Lubachenko for contributions to marine biology and understanding of climate change and the service of Oregon. HJR 41, promoting amendment to Oregon Constitution relating to state guarantee of the bonded indebtedness of the Oregon Health and Science University. HJR 42, proposing an amendment to Oregon Constitution related to freedom of expression. HJR 44, proposing an amendment to Oregon Constitution related to campaign finance. HJR 45, declaring legislative policy in support of fatherhood and promoting bonds between children and parents, regardless of parents' marital status. HJR 46, proposing an amendment to Oregon Constitution related to health care providers. HJR 47, proposing an amendment to Oregon Constitution related to authorizing cities and counties to adopt size value taxation system in lieu of uniform ad valorem property taxation. HJR 51, encouraging school districts to provide charter education programs.
Measures read the first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. Propositions and motions. First reading of House bills.
House Bill 2005 relating to elected petitions and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2006 relating to hospital rate regulation and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2015 relating to liquefied natural gas. House Bill 2018 relating to cigarette tax and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2019 relating to hospital rates and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 2020 relating to invasive species appropriate money and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3144 relating to transportation workforce development. House Bill 3181 relating to surplus revenue refunds and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3196 relating to space rental and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3197 relating to adult foster home care for individuals with developmental disabilities. House Bill 3198 relating to health benefit plan premium surcharge for participants who use tobacco and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3201 relating to Oregon Liquor Control Commission licenses. House Bill 3202 relating to exemption from disclosure of audio recording of voice of caller to 911 emergency center. House Bill 3204 relating to dental hygienists and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3205 relating to licensure authority of teacher standards and practice commission. House Bill 3206 relating to transportation of hazardous material by rail and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3207 relating to post-sale monitoring of products. House Bill 3208 relating to transaction receipts. House Bill 3209 related to health planning and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3210 related to Oregon Virtual School District. House Bill 3211 relating to easement granted under duress. House Bill 3212 relating to ballot measure 49, 2007 claims. House Bill 3213 relating to grouping of participants for health insurance plans. House Bill 3214 related to county property tax collections. House Bill 3215 relating to unauthorized aliens. House Bill 3216 relating to exchange facilitators. House Bill 3217 relating to motor vehicle liability insurance policy arbitration provisions. House Bill 3218 relating to on-the-job training for ex-offenders and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3219 relating to smoking. House Bill 3220 relating to fitness of youth to proceed on delinquency petition and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3221 relating to destination resorts. House Bill 3227 relating to coal. House Bill 3232 relating to Oregon Health Licensing Agency. House Bill 3234 relating to clinical laboratories. House Bill 3235 relating to prescription drug sales. House Bill 3236 relating to immunizations. House Bill 3237 relating to elections. House Bill 3242 relating to prearrangement of death care. House Bill 3243 relating to unlawful discrimination for medical services. House Bill 3244 relating to election petitions. House Bill 3245 relating to financial accounts for the benefit of minors and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3246 relating to the extension of time for exemptions of certain districts from Oregon Educator Benefit Board requirements. House Bill 3247 relating to water quality. House Bill 3248 relating to railroad grade crossings. House Bill 3249 relating to natural resource conservation areas. House Bill 3250 relating to underdeveloped property increment financing and prescribing an effective date. House Bill 3251 relating to health clubs. House Bill 3252 relating to driving privileges. House Bill 3259 1269 relating to the Oregon Health Plan, Hospital 3260 relating to health care infrastructure, Hospital 3261 relating to certificates of need and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3264 relating to probation and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3265 relating to safe food practice inspections and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3271 relating to crime, Hospital 3272 relating to taxation, prescribing an effective aid and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3274 relating to medical marijuana, appropriating money and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3279 relating to adult foster homes, Hospital 3281 relating to protection from fire and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3282 relating to the sale of public debt instruments and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3283 relating to tax credits for recycling and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3284 relating to workers' compensation administrative agencies, Hospital 3286 relating to forest management, Hospital 3287 relating to management of forest lands and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3289 relating to rural fire protection and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3290 relating to the well-being of working families, appropriating money and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3291 relating to tax credits for energy conservation, Hospital 3292 relating to local government public safety funding, appropriating money and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3293 relating to health insurance, Hospital 3294 relating to remedial education, Hospital 3296 relating to farm worker housing construction, appropriating money and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3299 relating to theft of agricultural products, Hospital 3300 relating to the green economy and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3301 relating to workforce development activity funding and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3302 relating to smoking, Hospital 3303 relating to bird seed excise tax, appropriating money, prescribing an effective date, and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3304 relating to public employee retirement, Hospital 3305 relating to the inheritance tax credits and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3306 relating to use of land zoned for exclusive farm use, Hospital 3307 relating to dwellings not provided in conjunction with resource use on resource land, Hospital 3308 relating to residential care for individuals on outpatient commitment, Hospital 3309 relating to tax expenditures and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3310 relating to criminal procedure, Hospital 3312 relating to tax expenditures, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3313 relating to land use, Hospital 3314 relating to child abuse, Hospital 3319 relating to foreign vehicle registration, Hospital 3320 relating to downed trees, Hospital 3321 relating to local government consolidation and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3222 relating to dwellings for relatives on resource lands, Hospital 3331 relating to education, appropriating money and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3332 relating to elections and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3333 relating to payment of premium expense by certain participants for insurance offered by the Public Employees Benefit Board, Hospital 3334 relating to the development of high-speed railroad and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3335 relating to home health services, Hospital 3336 relating to nonpartisan offices, Hospital 3337 relating to steam bank stabilization structures, Hospital 3339 relating to limited licenses for physicians, Hospital 3341 relating to crime providing for criminal sentence reduction that requires approval by the two-thirds majority, Hospital 3342 relating to guilt except for insanity, Hospital 3343 relating to persons providing alcoholic beverages, Hospital 3344 relating to the statutes of limitations and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3345 relating to workers' compensation claims, Hospital 3346 relating to taxation and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3351 relating to veterans' recognition registration plates, Hospital 3352 relating to home builder install renewable energy systems, Hospital 3353 relating to alcoholic drug programs and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3354 relating to traffic offenses, Hospital 3355 relating to public employee of veterans, Hospital 3356 relating to urban renewal, Hospital 3358 relating to privacy of consumer financial information and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3360 relating to meat inspection, Hospital 3361 relating to school finance and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3362 relating to tax credit for English as a second language classes and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3363 relating to state financial administration and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3364 relating to criminal aliens, Hospital 3365 relating to prevailing wages for service contracts and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3368 relating to urban reserves, Hospital 3371 relating to driving while under the influence of marijuana and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3372 relating to energy conserving improvements in existing buildings, Hospital 3373 relating to definition of science, Hospital 3374 relating to insurance producers, Hospital 3375 relating to Deschutes River Basin, Hospital 3377 relating to business energy tax credits allowed for fuel cell systems and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3381 relating to tax incentives for services as an emergency medical technician and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3384 relating to public assistance and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3385 relating to income tax credit for primary care physicians, Hospital 3386 relating to criminal history registry, Hospital 3397 relating to civil actions, appropriating money and declaring an emergency, Hospital 3398 relating to finance, appropriating money, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3402 relating to domestic relations, Hospital 3406 relating to cigarette taxes, prescribing an effective date, appropriating money, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority, Hospital 3407 relating to local government taxes on alcoholic beverages and prescribing an effective date, Hospital 3408 relating to probation on local real property transfer taxes, Hospital 3416 relating to dwellings on resources land, Hospital 3417 relating to estray animals, Hospital 3480 3452 relating to historic ghost towns. House Bill 3453 relating to persons with a possessory right to minerals located in deposits on the land of another. House Bill 3454 relating to water control. House Bill 3455 relating to service provided by association of unit owners and community governed by declarations. House Bill 3456 relating to voluntary intoxications. House Bill 3457 relating to constitutional competency examinations. House Bill 3458 relating to campaign finance. House Bill 3459 relating to declaration of state of emergency. House Bill 3460 relating to law enforcement agencies of schools and declaring an emergency. House Bill 3461 relating to demand side management actions.
Bills read first time are passed to the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 2466 relating to administrative rule review by Legislative Council and declaring an emergency. House Bill 2588 relating to agreement among the state to elect the president by national popular vote. House Bill 2621 relating to ballots and declaring an emergency.
Bills read second time are passed to third reading. Consent calendar. The clerk will read the bill and short summary.
House Bill 2085 relating to notaries public. Modifies a list of documents used with which notarial officer may rely in identifying person.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2085. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam. Gilliam votes aye. Representative Springer. Springer votes aye. House Bill 2085, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill in short summary.
House Bill 2086, relating to administrative dissolution of nonprofit corporations and declaring an emergency, permits Secretary of State to waive requirement that administratively dissolve nonprofits. Corporations apply for reinstatement within 5 years from date of dissolution.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2086. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jensen. Jensen votes aye. Representative Greenlick. Greenlick votes aye. House Bill 2086, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill and short summary.
House Bill 2087, relating to nonprofit corporations that maintain historic cemeteries, prohibits Secretary of State from changing fee to file annual report from nonprofit corporations if purpose of nonprofit corporation is set out in Articles of Incorporation.
The question now arises on third reading and final passage of House Bill 2087. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Kotek. Kotek votes aye. Representative Thatcher. Thatcher votes aye. House Bill 2087, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the bill and short summary.
Senate Bill 97 related to loan cancellation life insurance allows Department of Veterans Affairs to procure and provide loan cancellation life insurance.
Question now arises on third reading and final passage of Senate Bill 97. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Olson. Olson votes aye. Representative Stigler. Representative Stigler. Stigler votes aye. Representative Gilliam. Gilliam votes aye. Senate Bill 97, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Third reading of House bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2052 related to establishing specified facilities.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2052A. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and happy birthday. Colleagues, House Bill 2052 deals with the placement of homes involving the Psychiatric Security Review Board, which I'll be referring to as PSRB. I think the majority of you are probably aware of the concerns local communities have towards PSRB homes being placed in their backyards. Communities in Cornelius, Milwaukee, Albany, and several others across the state have voiced their opinions in opposition to the placements. The governor recognized there existed a serious problem in that he created a task force to review the matter. Both the Chair of Human Services, Representative Carolyn Tomei, and I were assigned to this task force this past year. As a result, I've met with a small work group to come up with a solution dealing with the concerns voiced by the public. Washington County Sheriff Rob Gordon, Linn County Commissioner Roger Nyquist, and Linn County Mental Health Director Frank Moore greatly helped in crafting House Bill 2052. Additionally, I want to recognize that Bob Jundeff of Disability Rights Oregon was involved as well. There are three key elements that we all wanted this bill to do. One was to provide a voice to the communities. The second was to increase transparency. And the third, to maintain the integrity of PSRB. All this bill does is to amend ORS 169690, which talks about citizen advisory groups for placement of certain homes. House Bill 2052 just adds a subgroup from your local public safety coordinating council to be involved in the consideration of PSRB placements. This is the group that is made of the subgroup. Your district attorney, either the sheriff or chief of the community, depending upon the jurisdiction, the county mental health director, a designee of the city council or board of commissioners, that, again, depending on the jurisdiction, a consumer from the mental health community, and a representative of an organization that advocates on behalf of persons with mental health issues. There were many who helped craft this bill, and honestly, there were a lot of folks, and I greatly appreciate all their help. I greatly appreciate the chair of our committee, of the Human Services Committee, on this as well. Obviously, this bill was unanimously supported by the members of the Human Services Committee. There is no fiscal impact to this bill, and I urge your aye vote to allow to move forward with this. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, first of all, to the bill.
To the bill.
Thank you. First of all, I want to commend the good legislator from Albany, who did an incredible amount of work on this bill. As he referenced, we had problems in Milwaukee, where I live, where there was to be placed transitional housing for people who are leaving the state hospital. And I think there were problems also in Albany and in Washington County and other places throughout the state. So the governor called a group of people together from around the state who were stakeholders in this issue. The first few meetings were very contentious. It was very difficult. And I wondered if any of us would be able to get together enough to come up with some consensus. It was nothing short of miraculous that we did. And I want to commend the good representative from Albany who worked so hard on this issue. We came up with a conclusion, I think, that satisfied both the people who are responsible for patients leaving the hospital, for the advocates for those folks, for the public safety community, and for the communities in the cities in which this transitional housing may be placed. So I would urge your I vote on this bill, which is a very hard-crafted bill that brought in all the interests of people who were invested in this issue. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
I wanted to express appreciation also to the representative from Albany for assigning this task to public safety coordinating councils. These councils were set up by statute some years ago, and I really appreciate recognizing the value of the work that they do. These LPSCs, or Local Public Safety Coordinating Councils, bring together law enforcement, the judicial branch, human services, and other aspects to talk about the interrelationship of the criminal justice system and human services. It's an excellent place to assign this, and I appreciate it. I will support the bill.
Further discussion. Representative Olson, do you wish to close?
I do, Mr. Speaker, and thanks for asking. One thing I forgot to mention to you, there is a 60-day window period that the subgroup is required by law to respond to PSRB once they're notified through your local public safety coordinating council to evaluate and attempt to locate a placement. So thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Widener. Widener votes aye. Representative Shields. Representative Shields. Shields is off the floor. House Bill 2052A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2201, relating to unemployment insurance administration.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2201A. Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and like the rest of my colleagues, happy birthday.
Thank you, Representative.
Colleagues, House Bill 2201 is brought to us by the Employment Department. It does two things to the existing law. First, it expands the amount of time that a corporate officer of a C corporation can request to be exempted from unemployment insurance taxes. The second thing it does is that it expands the liability for unemployment insurance to those who are personally responsible within the organization to pay that liability insurance in the event that there is a problem with that business going out of business. There were some other issues with the bill. We've cleaned those up, amended it, so that today I urge your aye vote for 2201.
Further discussion. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I would direct your attention to the actual wording of this bill, because I do not believe that it does what it may have been intended to do. On page 1, line 24, 25, and then top of the second page, the relevant language says, in the case of default by an employer, an officer, member, partner, or employee is under a duty to perform the actions required by employers under this chapter, shall be personally liable for amounts due under this chapter. And then it says in the next subsection, this section shall apply only to persons who is one of the following, an officer or employee of a corporation. Now, I don't know about you, but if I'm an employee of a corporation, I don't want to be held personally liable because those that are over payments to employment accounts haven't made their payments. And yet that's what this says. It doesn't limit it just to those who have authority to issue these payments. It says it's going to apply to any employee or director, and that the employee is under a duty to perform the actions required by the employers. That is what the wording says. You don't go to intent. A court doesn't go to intent unless the wording is not clear. I say we vote no on this bill in its current form. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Cameron, do you wish to close?
Not at this time.
Further discussion. No. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye, and those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Jefferson Smith. Smith votes aye. Representative Greenlick. Greenlick votes aye. Representative Springer. Springer votes nay. House Bill 2201A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2509, relating to health education and declaring an emergency.
Question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2509A. Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2509A comes to you from the House Committee on Education. It is a two-page long bill, which reflects the simplicity of this bill. It makes important housekeeping changes in law, but will not make substantive changes in what's happening in our local school districts. This bill is, in fact, about human sexuality education that is offered in our public schools. This legislation will clearly and firmly place our sex education regulations within the purview of health education statutes. This is part of the health and human development studies that our students undertake during their studies. The bill also makes an important clarification since the statute was originally written in the early 1990s, and it simply states that any sex education that is offered in our schools must be age appropriate, and it also must be medically accurate. This is very important because as students are learning about themselves, about their bodies, about the ways that their bodies are changing, they need to know that they can rely on accurate, factual information that is going to help them take good care of themselves. We received testimony from the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services in our committee, and they talked about the importance of comprehensive, medically accurate sex education for our students. And I want to read a little bit from their testimony. Comprehensive sexuality education is an evidence-based approach that includes information on abstinence, healthy relationships, refusal skills, effective use of contraceptives, pregnancy prevention, and sexually transmitted disease prevention. And this is the most important part. Comprehensive sexuality education is shown to effectively delay the initiation of sexual intercourse, increase the use of contraception in those who are sexually active, and reduce sexually transmitted diseases. This is something very important that we can do for the youth of this state. One of the other things that's important to recognize about the importance of being medically accurate and age appropriate is to recognize the whole scope of health education that is offered to our students. In elementary school, our students are learning important information about what to do if somebody touches them inappropriately. Who can they go to? Who can they ask? It's about abuse prevention. As they get into the older elementary school years, it's about the important questions that they have as they start to notice the changes in their bodies, the changes in their moods, the changes in their feelings. It's about young middle school students starting to recognize, especially young girls, that if, as they have the onset of menstruation, which is happening earlier and earlier, actually in elementary school now, that painful menstrual periods are not normal, and that's not something that they have to suffer with. They can ask for help. That is really, in the end, what this bill is about, offering comprehensive, medically accurate, age-appropriate health education to every student across the state of Oregon. Again, this isn't going to make a major change in practice in our local school districts. The Department of Education has had the authority for a long period of time to write rules about how school districts implement our currently existing state law related to sex education. All of us, I think, have been the recipient of piles of paper from agencies talking about their rulemaking processes and seeing new rules that they write under existing law. This happens all the time. One of the reasons that we have administrative rule is to be flexible. And currently, the Oregon administrative rule does address the issues of being age-appropriate and medically accurate. It was completely within their authority to do that. But it's now 2009. It is appropriate for our state law to reflect that when we are teaching health education in school, that it is medically accurate and that it is age appropriate. I think our students deserve no less, and we should expect no less from our public schools. Colleagues, this is a very good bill. It will reduce teen pregnancy, and it will keep our kids safe. It will help them stay healthy, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Good morning, colleagues. I rise today with absolutely no illusion that I'm going to persuade you this morning, nor do I rise under the illusion that I'm going to change the course of the state of Oregon as it relates to sex education. But I do rise today as a father of healthy boys and a beautiful daughter, and I rise today as the state representative of District 57 in Northeast Oregon. And today I'd just like to bring you that perspective. I have the greatest respect for our school teachers. They're talented. They're caring. They're compassionate. Very, very knowledgeable. And I have absolutely no doubt in my mind they would do a very, very acceptable job teaching sex education. But I'd share with you one thought, and that is no matter how great our teachers are, they can never take the place of a parent. They can never take the place of a parent. As a father, one of the hardest discussions I ever had was with my boys talking about human sexuality. And I can remember the conversation as if it was yesterday. It was driving down a country road outside of Lexington, which is a small town outside of Heppner. I had my three boys. The youngest one was still in diapers. And I turned to my oldest son, who would have been about 7 years old, 8 years old, and I said, "Son, can I talk to you about sex?" And right there, I was nervous. I was like, "Oh, man." And I told my son everything I knew about sex. I told him how wonderful it was. I told him how wonderful it felt. I also told him the responsibility that comes with it. I talked with him about pregnancy. I talked with him about the possibility of contracting disease if that was to occur. To this day, that little 7 or 8 year old boy, now he's 18, he's heading off to college, and today I can turn to my son and I can say, son, can we talk? Sure, Dad. And he'll sit down and talk. His younger brother, same way. His younger brother, same way. Now my beautiful daughter doesn't turn to me. She turns to my wife. And let me tell you, there's no one closer in the world than my daughter and my wife. They're like this. My daughter's in kindergarten, and she has had this conversation. She's been told how special she is. She's been told what her divine nature is. I just want to leave one thought with you. Would House Bill 2509A be necessary if fathers would step up and tell their daughters just how special they are? If fathers would step up and do their job and tell their daughters how special they are, would this bill be necessary? And mothers, if you would step up and look your sons in the eyes and tell them what their responsibilities are as men, would this bill be necessary? The fact is, mom, dads, we're not doing our jobs. And as a consequence, we have House Bill 2509. Colleagues, I have complete admiration for each and every one of you today. I respect your vote. Today I'll be voting against 2509, not because I do not believe the need is there, but rather today I'm not willing to take this sacred responsibility off the shoulders of parents. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
To the bill, Mr. Speaker.
To the bill.
I hope my two small glasses don't slide off my big head. Anyway, I frequently speak about my daughter here, and everything we do here has something to do with real life, I hope, and if it doesn't, we shouldn't be doing it. And I know this is a very, very sensitive issue because I am one of those parents that has had those conversations. Matter of fact, my daughter, I had the opportunity and pleasure to be the one to go pick her up, take her to school and pick her up every day until she started driving the school bus almost every day. And when she was in kindergarten, I don't know what inspired her. She, on the way home, is in my cracky old truck. She said, Dad, how do people get pregnant? And she probably used the plural because I always, back then when I was talking to other parents with young children, we were all talking about our kids, I would say when we were pregnant, because pregnancy is a team sport, and it takes a lot of cooperation with parents in an ideal situation. Yes, there's certain cooperation it definitely takes, but I won't go into that. But I said, honey, you know what? In all my sage fatherly wisdom, I said, honey, your mother's a medical professional, and I feel she's most qualified to answer that question. And that is exactly what I told her, too. And then Frances got home from work, and we presented her with the question, and my wife, being the consummate professional that she is, got out, she has Gray's Anatomy, among other books, and had a brief conversation about it, and then she followed up, as always, and her and Marcella went to the bookstore and got some age-appropriate and anatomical correct books and literally walked right through the whole process. And she was very young. And that was that. I figure if a child's old enough to ask a question, they're old enough and deserve an answer. Now you wind the clock forward and she's in ninth grade. And I believe I can't remember if she's had some already, but she has a health class and they're walking through the whole process of human reproductivity again. And I'm sure that there's children in that class that are 15 years old, by the way, who are capable of reproducing now. And some of them kids are getting it for the very first time. because I think my comment earlier reflects some people are feel rather awkward with this topic. Fortunately for my daughter, she's growing up in a home where we encourage inquiry, questions, even hard questions, and even questions that make us feel uncomfortable. But not every child has that. Should every parent do that? Should every child have that? Absolutely. Do they? No, they don't. And I do trust that we can, as a society, do this within our education system. And once again, I want to make it very clear. I very much respect people's concerns about this. Absolutely. As a parent of a person that is more important to me than anything on earth. But, you know, what we really want to avoid is children, one, having sex, children having children, unwanted pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases, and the abuse that comes with ignorance. We cannot tolerate that. We can't have it, and we need to prevent it and avoid it. And we need to do it in an age-appropriate way. I couldn't agree more. I just want to thank the committee and the good committee chair for bringing this. I know it is very sensitive, and I respect that completely. And it's a good bill. I urge your vote.
Further discussion, Representative Maurer.
Thanks, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
Yes, I do.
She does.
Thank you. Why is there an emergency clause on the implementation of House Bill 2509?
Thank you, Representative. I think because it is imperative that we ensure that kids are receiving medically accurate information.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you. To the bill?
To the bill.
My concerns with this bill are not about its content, but clearly about the process. The administrative rule currently that's on the books was revised in 2007. I believe it was adopted in June of 2007. That administrative rule is 581-022-1440. Let me just say a couple words about the definitions that are used in this administrative rule: age appropriate, balanced, best practice, culturally sensitive, gender identity, gender role, medically accurate, research based. And there's a couple more, but I'm not going to go on. The point is that I thought this body was the lawmaking body. I thought that the agency was supposed to write rules that are based on the laws that we have on the books. If they want to change the rules and they look at the statute and say, can we rewrite the rules given the statute? The Department of Education did that. They rewrote the rules based on the current law. That was done in 2007, and to suggest that it could not have been done last session, the draft rule was developed over a 3-year period. I'm not sure that an emergency clause at the end of this bill is wholly appropriate in this situation. I'm looking at the literature that's on our desk, and I won't read the names of the organization, but let me quote, House Bill 2509 is aimed at improving our existing public education, sex education programs to ensure the use of medically accurate materials and information. Folks, the rules today say that they're supposed to be using medically accurate information. So my question is, why are we changing the law when the rules are already in effect and have been in effect for 2 years, and in fact school districts are already implementing the rules that are in effect? I question the agency for changing the rules and then going, oops, we need to change the law to fit the rules. I think it's backwards. My no vote is based on a process issue. I would hope that our agencies are not changing rules in order to someday to change the law to meet the rule. We're elected by our constituents to write law. It flows downhill. I hope the department will consider this in the future and ask for us to be involved in this rulemaking process before they change it and then come back to us and ask to change the law. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Let me say first, I fully respect the concerns of my good colleague from Josephine County, but I happen to have had the honor of sitting on the State Board of Education as its community college advisor at the time that the rules were changed. And at that time, the department had been going through the process of updating the curriculum, and I will say that everyone that came in and testified at the time was supportive of the curriculum. And I should also point out that when we heard this bill in committee, we heard no objections to the curriculum either. At that time, the Board of Ed's legal counsel told us that the changes in rule were very much within the existing statute, but recommended that a change in statute be sought in the next session, just to update the language and to clarify that this curriculum was based on information that was medically accurate and that had gone through an evidence-based process. And hence this language, and I would argue that it's very much in keeping with the prerogatives of this chamber. I will also say that there were some concerns expressed during the discussion in the committee about a couple of things that had been excised from the new language, and so amendments were offered and passed that put them back in, and I would argue in greatly superior form, much more comprehensible and useful than had been there before. This is a good bill. It's very much in keeping, and I would urge you all to pass it.
Further discussion, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
It was not by plan today, colleagues, that my son is in this chamber. This was planned months ago, he and his best friend. But I'm glad he's here. I'm glad he's here because this is not a topic that's taboo in our home. This is something that we're open about and we discuss because it's our job. And quite frankly, my son and I started in a very appropriate way dating when he was probably about 7. And the reason for that is there should be nobody better equipped to teach and train him how he is supposed to act towards a woman on a date than his mother. Now, certainly his father has his role and owns that role and is very appropriate and honorable in that role. But we take that on as our responsibility, and it should be. But quite frankly, colleagues, I'm urging your no vote on this bill for different reasons. And I think equally important reasons. As it was mentioned earlier, there are existing administrative rules outlining the language that we are now following with. There is also approximately a 4-page document produced by ODE that delineates the topics for sex education, aligned with the ARs, aligned with what now we are doing as follow-up. It was my intent when my constituents sent me to Salem to represent them that I and my colleagues would make the laws and administrative rule would follow. And I feel, to some extent, that we've allowed ourselves to be placed in the back seat. And I know I wasn't sent here to be placed in the back seat. I asked in committee, and it was surfaced in different ways by different people, why are we doing this now? Why are we changing an existing law? And I have to be honest, with all due respect, I personally never received a satisfactory answer. Then I would ask why we're investing time, precious time, that taxpayers pay for to do this. If we're just clarifying, however, what we're clarifying now aligns with what has already been implemented, what is being practiced. And as you'll hear from me probably many times on this floor, is once again, we're telling local communities and school boards how to do their job. And I sat on one of those school boards long enough to know I didn't like it. Because I shopped with those people, I went to soccer games with those people, I still do, quite frankly. And I hear those concerns, and the school boards are in the best position to decide how to do this. So, colleagues, I do urge your no vote for many of the great reasons that have been brought up here, but also the great moral reasons and the great personal reasons that have been brought up, but also because this feels like we're in the back seat, but yet we're telling the school boards how to do this once again. Thank you.
Representative Gelser, do you wish to close?
Yes, please. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I really appreciate the respectful and good conversation that we've had here today, and I think it's reflective of the diversity of this body and something that we all share. Many of the people in this room are parents, and I know that each and every one of us that is fortunate enough to have sons and daughters at home are very concerned for their futures and their health and for the health and futures of the other children in our communities. And I know that everyone comes here with that heart and with that commitment. I wanted to address a couple of quick points and then make one more final pitch for the bill. The first, I would be remiss if I didn't point out that the sponsorship of the bill is actually the House Committee on Education, and this bill did not come to me at the request of the Oregon Department of Education. The department's bills are often pre-session filed at the request of the governor. This was a bill that was brought by public health advocates in the community, brought to me as a bill draft and introduced in the committee as a committee bill, but not at the request of the Oregon Department of Education. The second, I think the good representative from Portland talked about this earlier from his time serving on the state school board. The rules that are in place right now, the administrative rules, are completely consistent with existing law. And this happens all the time, that administrative rules are written and adjusted, and they move forward as we move forward in time and circumstances change. The Department of Education did absolutely nothing inappropriate in adopting those regulations. The other thing that is not unusual is that on this floor, we make housekeeping changes to statute that take time in our committees. It takes time on the floor. I'm recalling a bill that was carried last session by the good member from the Christmas Tree District that had something to do with the way housekeeping, the way that we deal with chimney sweeps. And I would argue that the health of our children and their safety is at least as important as the way that we regulate chimney sweeps. And it's appropriate that we come back and revisit language to modernize it as appropriate. I think that it's also important that our law, our statute, which is the ultimate authority on what we do in our schools, sets a minimum floor that says whatever you're doing in your local district, and that's important. This bill does not say how these courses are to be taught. It just sets a basic minimum standard that it must be age-appropriate and that it must be medically accurate. As I was listening to the debate here today, I was thinking about my mother-in-law, who unfortunately died nearly 4 years ago. But she was a nurse practitioner, and in the last job that she had before she died, she worked at Boston University as their student health director. And she would often talk about her sadness and frustration at the young women and men that would come to her clinic that did not have medically accurate information about how to take care of themselves. And while I agree that it is ultimately the responsibility of each of us who are parents to raise our children, to give them good information, to infuse them with our own values, these young people that my mother-in-law was seeing somehow had missed that. And as a result, they were suffering with sexually transmitted diseases that they were going to live with for the rest of their lives. They were struggling with the lifelong impact of what it feels like to release a baby that you love into the arms of another person because you placed that child for adoption. All because these individuals, somehow, someone, hadn't taken the responsibility to make sure that they had had age-appropriate, medically accurate information about their bodies. We had testimony from a young woman in the committee that talked about, she was a peer counselor, a young woman who hadn't realized that she had a medical problem that was indicated by her painful menstrual cramps. For whatever reason, that information was not getting to her at home. In terms of whether or not we can afford this, I think that we cannot afford to avoid this conversation. It's difficult to have with our kids, and it's certainly even more difficult to have on the House floor. But we know that in Oregon, teen childbearing costs taxpayers, federal, state, and local, at least $91 million in 1994. And that's the financial cost. That's before we start to talk about the human cost on those young women that have given birth to those children, on those children who grow up in poverty, and on our system that needs to turn around and provide services. In the end, this is about making sure that each of our children is well cared for, that they have basic, good, quality, accurate information about their bodies. That is the most important thing we can do. It's a very good bill. It's important for our kids, and I urge your i-vote. Thank you.
Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett was off the floor. House Bill 2509A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 85, really new government ethics adjudication process and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 218, really new crime victims compensation program benefits. Senate Bill 242 relating to previous convictions. Senate Bill 243 relating to criminal procedure. Senate Bill 280 relating to animal fighting. Senate Bill 464 relating to recording groups. Senate Bill 539 relating to exemption from the insurance code.
Bills read for the first time are passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of Senate bills. Third reading of Senate bills. Other business of the House. Other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Nolan, you actually didn't get in first, but out of courtesy, I'm going to let you go first.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'll try to be more attentive. House Democrats, please plan to join us in caucus immediately following the floor today.
Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to request a rule suspension to give Representative Garrett an opportunity to vote on House Bill 2509.
Representative Hanna requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow Representative Garrett to vote on House Bill 2509A. Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Further announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans will caucus briefly at the conclusion of today's session.
Further announcements. Remonstrances. Representative Hanna, are you intentionally in the queue for remonstrances? No. Other remonstrances. Adjournment. Representative Tomei.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. Thursday, March 12th at, as I said, 10:15.
Representative Tomei moves that the House adjourn until 10:15 a.m. on Thursday, March 12, 2009. Without objection, the House adjourns.